You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. This week, we're going to talk about the Mass Effect Trilogy, Mass Effect Legendary Edition. We're going to talk about how there will be no PS5s available in stores this week. And we'll also discuss a podcaster getting patched out of Watch Dogs Legion, among other things. This is episode number 28. We are recording for the week of November 9th, 2020. I am Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the Games Industry Public Defender, the Scourge of Ironforge, and Microsoft Shill. He's got a big week coming up, folks. Nick Zelenkevich.
I just want to say that I am not the podcaster that was taken out of Legion. I never was in Legion, so don't worry about that. I'm okay.
I'm sure everybody is just a sigh of relief, you know, across the podcast community right now. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. As I mentioned that I've been playing Shadow of the Colossus with my four-year-old, we're up to the last Colossus now. And I had, like, there's that part on the way to get to the last Colossus where the horse doesn't make it.
Right.
And I was like, do I want to let him watch this happen? And then, like, I couldn't get a read on how he was, like, did he like the horse? Like, he seemed like he liked the horse, but it's like, did he like the horse? Like, is he like, yeah, the horse is awesome? Or is he just like, yeah, the horse is okay. He didn't hate the horse, which is good. But I'm like, I'm just going to, like, warn him about this ahead of time. I don't need to be inflicting, like, that level of trauma on my kid at this point. I was like, just so you know, the horse is going to fall down a cliff, but he's going to be okay. He comes back later. Don't worry about it. And then I went to make the jump, and then I screwed up, and me and the horse fell down the cliff, and we got a game over screen.
Now, I think you just did a major disservice to that kid, Nick. Yeah, I think you did.
Here's the
you said he's four now, right? Yeah. You know, by the time I was his age, I had watched Neverending Story already. You know, I've seen Artex drown in a pit of mud already. You know, not long after that, well, I guess technically speaking, 6 years after, I think it was 9 or 10 when Lion King came out, I saw what Scar did to Mufasa. You know, the hardcore shit that happened when you were kids. I had watched The Land Before Time, you know. Okay, that should get you ready for life.
Land Before Time, that one hurt. But my problem
Bambi.
My problem with Neverending Story is that my aunt would always put it on Thanksgiving, and like I'd be in and out of the room. So I never actually was able to like follow the plot because I'd be in and out of the room where it was playing. And so like I'm just like, oh, now they're here, now there's this. I don't even know if I saw the horse die because I might have been out of the room or something. Like, and I'm like, where'd the horse go? What's going on? And, like, it never made any sense to me. And so like I just didn't. You get to the end or whatever, and I'm like, none of this. This is all. I couldn't get into it. I didn't understand it. I've never had any kind of emotional attachment to that.
You know the worst part of Artax dying, and if this is a spoiler for somebody, I am so sorry. The worst part of him dying is that he didn't have to die. They were in, I'm pretty sure it was called the Sea of Sorrow. So you don't remember that part?
No, I don't.
Yeah, they were in the Sea of Sorrow, and you have to pass the Sea of Sorrow by not being sad. Like, you have to be happy or content, and you can just walk through it. But if you are sad, it pulls you down into it, and that's how you die.
Wait, so the horse was sad, or was it Atreyu?
The horse was sad. It had given up on life and got pulled down to the sea. So I'm pretty sure it's called the Sea of Sorrow. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. But it got pulled down into it and died. That 4 years old.
The horse was sad.
This is great video game content, by the way, but it needs to be talked about. It does need
to be. But to be fair, like, you hear stories about how, like, the subjugation of horses is not good for them. Like, putting, like, I feel like there's a greater commentary here that needs to be addressed.
Sorry, it was not the Sea of Sorrow. It is the Swamp of Sadness. I just looked it up. That's what it is. Oh. It's the Swamp of Sadness. And if you were sad, that's it swallowed you up. So, like I said, that made me the man I am today.
Because you're like, I will never be sad.
You know? Yeah. Uh-huh. But, you know, but at least you're getting quality time.
Exactly.
Oh man. Yeah, I really don't like this week. I didn't even get a chance to play that much. I think I played a little bit of Ghost Runner, but it's just been one of those weeks for me where I'm not getting a lot done. So hopefully this week will be better. There's a bunch of stuff coming out. Like, the Falconeer comes out on Tuesday. I'm pretty sure it comes out on Tuesday. It's an Xbox Series X launch title, so that means I'll be grabbing it on PC. I'm looking forward to that. That'd be great. So next time we do a show, I'll definitely be talking about that. But it's time for us to talk about what is on the list tonight. But before we do that, I would like to thank any first-time listeners. Welcome. Thanks for taking the time to listen. And I'd like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners, as well as give a very special thanks to our supporters on both Patreon and Twitch. Can't thank you guys enough. If you want to know when we go live on Twitch, just follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/themashnetwork if you want to keep up with what's going on with the Mash Those Buttons Network, as well as the Mash Those Buttons show and some of our other shows like Clan of Three, which is our Mandalorian show right now. And we'd also love to have you join our Discord, which is at mash.gg/discord. And let's talk about Mass Effect Legendary Edition. We actually talked about this a couple weeks ago. It was still rumors at this point, but I guess the rumors were very accurate because they even had the name. Like, we were just calling the Mass Effect Trilogy Remaster or whatever. And then, according to a source, it was called Mass Effect Legendary Edition, which is true. So, on N7Day, BioWare confirmed Mass Effect Legendary Edition, a trilogy bundle that includes Mass Effect 1 through 3 and all of the DLC, which, in my opinion, is important. Like, so, this is the one thing I disliked about how Mass Effect's DLC worked, right? The DLC only gave you about 3 missions with the person, you know? And in my opinion, the DLC was not worth having if you already beat the game. The DLC is only worth having if you play through the game with the DLC already installed. So that's why I wasn't a fan of the way they delivered DLC there. So I'm actually looking forward to this, playing through this again, because the first time I played it, Mass Effect 2 specifically, I didn't have the DLC installed the first time. I played it early, and then I didn't have the DLC. I had to wait for the DLC to come out. So this time I'm going to have those characters with me throughout the entire game. So I'm very happy about that. BioWare says that, you know, for many months now, our team at BioWare has been hard at work updating the textures, shaders, models, effects, and technical features of 3 enormous games. Our goal was not to remake or reimagine the original games, but to modernize the experience so that fans and new players can experience the original work in its best possible form. It's been amazing to see the adventures of Commander Shepard take on new life and super sharp resolution, faster frame rates, and beautiful visual enhancements. As game developers, we always hope that our games will transcend their original platforms. Having the opportunity to remaster the trilogy means that the fruits of a decade of our work will live on and will be experienced better and clearer than ever before. You know, ever since the Final Fantasy remake, every time there's an HD remake now, people are like, well, is it a remake or a remaster? You know, I don't think we're going to get too many of these remakes like they did with Final Fantasy VII, especially from games that are like Mass Effect. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, yeah, the game came out, what was it, 2007? Mass Effect?
It's due for a refresh, yes.
Yeah, it came out in 2007, and you know, yeah, you just kind of need to refresh the textures and, you know, maybe update the weapon systems or something like that. But Final Fantasy VII came out, what, 97? You know, several generations ago.
Well, even there, like, there's a little bit of, like, Square being up their own butt a little bit. Like, oh, like, we're going to take this. And, like, they literally could have just, like I get, like, you want to update the systems and redo the graphics and you're going to build the game from scratch. They did not have to change the plot at all. And that thing still would have sold like hotcakes because people want to be back there. And it's fun that they did. Like, but at the same time, it's like now, like you pointed out, every time a new game, it's like, well, are they changing it? Are they going to make it weirder? Like, no, like, I'm excited for this because you've got all three Mass Effects in one place. The way that they're updating the textures, I would assume that should be consistent from game to game. So it's not like, you know, when you play a series like, you know, Mass Effect or anything, like, and you go back and it's like, yeah, you see the technical jumps when you go from game to game. And I guess you still will to a degree, because as we talked about, their one concern was sort of upgrading the combat in the first game. And it doesn't sound like they're going to be doing that necessarily, but so you'll see like how the game progresses, but like, you know, like, yeah, give it to me in one nice package, one experience where I can sit down and I know it's going to take me like probably years to actually go from the first game to the last one. Personally, that's what I'm excited for, is because I stalled out on Mass Effect 3 halfway through. I would love to sit down and start from, you know, scratch again with this, when this comes out, get the whole thing and go, assuming I can find the time for it, but. I'm excited for this, and I'm just irritated by Square that, like, yeah, we even have to ask, like, well, are they gonna change? Like, no, don't. The story was fine. Well, people may have had their issues with the Mass Effect story, but at this point, I think that pretty much everybody's made peace with that, and they're okay, and they understand when they go back and they get to the end of Mass Effect 3, they know what they're in for at this point.
Not everybody. Not everybody. I'll tell you this. Like, well, first of all, I want to comment on what you said. Well, let me start with the end of Mass Effect 3 first, right? Because I was one of those people that did not play Mass Effect 3 when it first came out. And I heard all the stories and people complaining about the ending and stuff like that. And I played Mass Effect 3 after they quote unquote fixed the endings. That's when I actually ended up playing Mass Effect 3. And I wasn't upset. I wasn't one of those people who was raging about the ending, regardless, right? But when I finally got to the end of Mass Effect 3, knowing that the ending was not going to be great, I played through it, I watched it, and I was like, wow, they were right. You know, they were right. Like, it was like the ending of Mass Effect 3 is bad. I will flat out say that. If you have never played Mass Effect before, you're gonna play through Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2 with this persistent character, Mass Effect 3. It does not have a good ending. It doesn't.
Mass Effect is one of those series that goes for like 6 or 7 seasons, and then the series finale just sucks. And it's like, you enjoyed, you know, you were into that for the seasons leading up to it. You were enjoyed the episodes. You were right there week to week. You loved all the characters, and then they just didn't stick the landing. And the thing is, though, like, you can still go back and rewatch those shows. Like, just because the ending sucked, it doesn't change. I mean, sometimes it can. Sometimes it can recontextualize the thing and whatnot. But you can still go back and get into it. I mean, if you're in the middle of Mass Effect 1, I think Mass Effect 2, regardless of how Mass Effect 3 ended, Mass Effect 2 is still a great game.
It is, absolutely.
You can enjoy that from start to finish, you know, and be super satisfied with that. But yeah, it's... At the very least, I think for the most part, people at least understand where their feelings are about the Mass Effect 3 ending. And if they're not cool with it, if that is going to ruin their experience knowing how this all ends and they don't want to go back and play through all that, then they don't have to purchase this. But if you're cool with the journey and you know, you're okay with the ending or whatever, or like me, you never got to the ending and this is your chance to kind of get back into it and go make that push, you know, then that's, you know, good, you know, go for that. Because personally, I want this just for the box. I want to be able to put this box somewhere and just be like, look at that.
Yeah. Like, it's, I'm going to enjoy it regardless. Like I said, the game is good. Like, it's the journey. The journey is good. And there's no way there, regardless, even if the endings that they provided were vastly different, they could not provide what a lot of people wanted, which is a personalized ending. It just wasn't going to happen. So. Now, what you said about Final Fantasy, the Final Fantasy VII remake, I think once a game hits a certain age, right, and the process of making games have changed so much, you kind of do have to change the story. Because think about how big of a game Final Fantasy VII is if you make that same exact game today. If you make that same exact game today, that game is massive.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
Game is massive, which means unless Final Fantasy VII Remake was going to be their main squeeze, it was going to be their big game. That's the game that the studio is really working on, which we know it's not. It was Final Fantasy 16, right. You know. Unless it's going to get the biggest budget, you aren't going to make a Final Fantasy VII, a game of that size, today. Unless, like I said, it's your main game. So that being the case, I think they had no choice but to break the game up, which means you're still going to sell a $60 game, right? You need to make it worth $60. And because of the way Final Fantasy VII works, you got to change the story.
I can understand, okay, we got to break the game up. And I can understand even that if you're like, okay, we got to blow out like the Midgard section and make that more detailed and whatnot. But I don't know how spoilery you want to get here. But the way that that ends, and was it the last boss or the second to last boss, and the way that they're kind of open about like, oh, we know you've been through this before, or at least at least they're winking and nodding at the fact like we assume that you've played through and you're familiar with Final Fantasy VII when you're doing this, I think there are people out there who want, just very specifically, want the experience as close as they can. And I think we talked about this with respect to other remakes and stuff, and thinking like WoW Classic and stuff, like they want to be able to go back and go to the Golden Saucer and redo the quest for the Golden Chocobo and all that stuff. And I get that, obviously it took them how long just to get the Midgard section out. Like, we're talking like a decade long project here to get the whole game out. And I understand if it's not their main priority, if they do want to, Final Fantasy 16 looks amazing from what we've seen so far. And that's the first Final Fantasy in a while where I'm like, I want to get back in on this. I haven't really cared for sort of the modernish stuff, like the direction they went with Final Fantasy 15. If your Final Fantasy has cars, I'm kind of out on it. Although I guess technically Final Fantasy 7 had cars, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to give Final Fantasy 15 an actual chance, Nick, to be honest with you.
I don't have time for that.
Watch the movie first. If I have time for it, you have time for it.
I got to play through it so I can see what parts I got to warn my kid about before we play through them together.
The section that you're talking about in the Final Fantasy VII Remake, I think it's necessary to appease people who have actually played through the game before. Because if the story changes, they're going to want to know why. And they do give you that. So, and it actually means I'm excited for the next games because, like, now I have no idea what's going to happen.
Then I feel like they shouldn't have called, because it was officially called Final Fantasy VII Remake, correct?
Yep, that is correct.
I feel like they shouldn't have called it because it's maybe like remix. Remix would have been fine because remix implies that we're taking the original elements but we're tweaking them, and it's not what it was. Remake to me says like, no, we're taking the same. It's the same recipe and we're following it. It's just we got better ingredients this time, and it's going to come out a little bit better.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is a remaster. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's the difference between a remaster and a remake. Like, they remade the game. That's like when they remake a movie, you know?
Now I'm trying to think, like, well, no. Like, okay, you can remaster music and, like, use, like, I guess, like, higher quality audio to produce, like, so I guess maybe you're right there. I don't know. I feel like it's just silly that like we now every game that comes out, and this is something we're going to continue to see. Like, this is like by no means is Mass Effect going to be the last remake we're going to get in a while here, a remaster or whatever. It just seems silly that we have to be like, well, are they going to change it? Like, cause it's just Square Enix being Square Enix.
Yeah. So to move on here, BioWare also confirmed they are working on a new Mass Effect. It is an early development. They shared one piece of concept art. and said a veteran team is working on it. So now BioWare has two games we have no idea what's going to look like. I mean, because
they have three games we have no idea what it's going to look like. include
Yeah, true. If you include Anthem in that, that is very true. But like with, you know, they have another Dragon Age coming out and another Mass Effect. So this is why they have, there's six people working on Anthem right now. They're like, they already bought it. They bought it already. We'll take our time with it. So, but yeah, so BioWare is definitely keeping busy. Let's move on to our next topic, which is the PS5 will not be available in stores on launch day. So Sony has announced that the PS5s will not be available in stores on launch day. Orders will be available digitally at retailers. So I wonder if that means at midnight on Thursday, because that's right, the 12th is Thursday, right? Midnight on Thursday, will you be able to make an order for a PS4 at a digital retailer, like Amazon or Best Buy or something like that? So this is what they're saying. They said, in the interest of keeping our gamers, retailers, and staff safe amidst COVID-19, today we are confirming that all day of launch sales will be conducted through the online stores of our retail partners. No units will be available in-store for purchase on launch day, November 12th or November 19th, depending on your region. Please don't plan on camping out or lining up at your local retailer on launch day in hopes of finding a PS5 console for purchase. Be safe, stay home, and place your orders online. That's nice and all, but I don't think it's about that. I think it's about, because I know they did have supply chain issues. I think this is about slowing down, because PS5 is going to sell, period. I think this may be about the look of it, right? With this, they'll definitely be able to fulfill all their pre-orders, right? And then on top of that, with the digital sales, you know, they don't have to ship hundreds or thousands of units to a store at a time. They just basically ship them out as they need them, you know? So I think that makes it a bit easier to deal with, because they were dealing with supply chain issues. I also think Microsoft was dealing with supply chain issues, but they weren't taking this route. So you could probably walk into a store and buy an Xbox on launch day, which is Tuesday. Big day, Nick, big day. But yeah, I think you can walk into a store and buy an Xbox, but I don't know. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I do believe that Xboxes will sell, but there's just because we know of how, you know, a lot of these games, like for example, I'm super excited for the Falcon Air. I don't have to play that on an Xbox, you know, and there's a lot of people like that. But then again, I wonder if this might backfire on Sony a little bit, where parents are coming in, they're looking for something to buy, because, you know, they may not get this message. A lot of them won't get it. It's not like they listen to the Mashles Button Show, a lot of parents, you know. And the parents that do already have probably heard this already. But, you know, they go into a store, well, we want a PS5. Oh, sorry, we don't have that, but we have the Xbox Series X. It's a next-gen console, too. All right, Timmy. Like that's what you're getting, you know, if you want to leave with something that day. So this actually may work out in favor of Microsoft, but, I mean, the PS5 will sell regardless. I just don't know. Like, you know, if we weren't in the middle of a pandemic, I would say by February, March, you should be okay to walk into a store and get a PS5, you know, or have a good chance of it.
Hopefully by February, March, you'll be okay to walk into a store, period.
Yeah. Yeah. Like because of the pandemic, I think it's a little different now. I don't know. Like if that's the case, like I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, in my case, I might as well just do a pre-order sale for a PS5 and just let it come in whenever it comes in. You know what I'm saying? Because I am I'm not really in a rush to get one. And if the PS5 just showed up my door one day, oh man, what a surprise. You know, like that, now I think about it. Especially because like you know, Spider-Man comes out. I think that's a launch title for PS5.
Yes.
But I'm gonna buy the digital ultimate edition on PS4, which comes with the you know, you also get the free upgrade to the PS5, so why not? You know, I might do that. It's a good plan. I'm glad I thought about it while I worked that out on the show.
You know? I just feel bad for all the, like, a console generation launch, especially since these things may very well be going away, as we've talked about the way the console generations are morphing. It used to feel like a big deal. It still kind of feels like a big deal, but I mean, you know, with all the other, you know, thousands of things that we've lost this year to the pandemic and experiences that people can't have, it's just another one of like, oh yeah, you know what? You know, there's something fun about, you know, camping out or getting up butt early and heading out to the store overnight and being in that line and being like part of that sense of community that you get from, it's like, oh yeah, we're all here for this item. And to engage in that, and it's kind of a shame, like, you know, like you can only do so many of those, and you only get so many opportunities to do that, you know, when you're young. And then, I mean, I guess for the PS6, maybe I could try to camp out for that if I really wanted to. I don't know, well, if I would, though.
Maybe that's an experience you like, maybe because you have a kid, you want to experience your kid. But me, like, you know, once retail stores started having enough stock of games that you did not have to go to midnight releases anymore, I was totally okay with that. The last midnight release I went to, Halo 2, that was the last one, which I pissed a lot of people off because they didn't, like, so, and this is when GameStop started, like, you can call and get a number, and I called and got my number. A lot of people didn't, and I was one of the last people online. And they called my number, and I just walked past a whole lot of people to get my Halo 2, and walked right back out. But yeah, I was never. I didn't hate doing it. Don't get me wrong, I didn't hate doing it. But at the same time, once it got to a point where it's like I could just walk into a Best Buy, walk into a Target, get the game, boom. That's what I did. You know, it's actually the reason I stopped shopping at GameStop altogether. Because, you know, I would go to a GameStop first and be like, oh yeah, I want to get this game. Oh, well, you didn't pre-order it, so we don't have any more left. I'm like, oh, okay. Let me go across the street to Best Buy. You know, and they have a ton of them.
I'm not saying there aren't better ways to do it, but at the same time, there's something special about that. And it's like, you know, it's kind of the thing, like, you do it once, you do it when you're young, you enjoy it. And then, like, yeah, you get older, like, there's better ways to do this. I ain't got time for this. I'm going to go to, right. You know, I'll go to Sears or whatever. You know, Sears, rest in peace, but.
yeah, that's how I got my Xbox 360. I think I told that story on this podcast already, but yeah, good old Sears, man. You don't have those like almost dead retailers anymore. They're just dead now, you know. You can't walk into a Kmart, you know, or a Bradley's.
Bradley's.
And find a gem, you know what I'm saying? You can't be like, I can't believe I found this here, because nobody knows about this place. You can't do that anymore.
Nope.
Now it's like, you know, you go into the places that everybody knows Target has consoles. Everybody knows, you know, Best Buy has consoles, but like, where's my Circuit City? Where's my Sears? You know, where's my Boscoff's? I guess, is Boscoff's still there? Like, you know, oh man. But yeah, so. If you did not pre-order a PS5, it is highly unlikely you're going to be able to get one, at least at retail price. I mean, I'm pretty sure scalpers are going to get them. So good luck with that. let's move on to Ubisoft patching out a in-game podcaster. So this article actually comes from PC Gamer, and it says two in-game podcasts in Watch Dogs Legion that feature British journalist Helen Lewis will be removed as a result of controversial statements she made in the past. Ubisoft said it was not made aware of Lewis' previous statements until after development of the game was complete. While the in-game podcasters are following, this is what Ubisoft says, while the in-game podcasters are following a pre-approved script and are not speaking in their own name or in their own opinions, we understand this collaboration itself may be seen as offensive, and we deeply regret any hurt this has caused. In response, we will be replacing these two podcast episodes in an upcoming update, and will reinforce our background checks for partners in the future. Now, Ubisoft, Yves, I know you're listening. I am disappointed that you did not reach out to us. I am disappointed. This is all we do, baby. This is all we do. Your game's rated M. It would have been fine. It would have been fine. Shit, I would have made a fucking limited series for you, Watch Dogs, if you did that for us. But no, that bridge has been burned, Eves.
Well, I was going to say, I have an idea for a new podcast series, and it's we record podcasts that you can listen to while you're playing a game. And it's like we're in the game, like talking about stuff in that world. So you just put it on in the background while you're playing the game, and it's like we're in part of the game.
Oh, I miss stuff like that. We used to do, well, not we, but there was in the Matrix Online. Yes. There was something called Radio Free Zion. I think I talked about that too, but
exactly something like that. We just have to do it for currently live games.
Yeah, that would be really cool. That would have been really cool. I actually spoke. I don't want to overspeak, but I spoke to a certain someone in the podcast community about that, and I think I don't know if that's too far off or not, but we'll see.
Really? Wow.
Spoilers.
I was just kind of being half serious. I was actually expecting to hit on something.
yeah. So, but we'll see.
What company is doing the Harry Potter game? Was it the Legends of Wizardry or something? Whatever that. What company's doing that?
I am not sure. I can't remember because I wasn't interested in the game. So I was like, I just didn't look.
Because my understanding is that the quotes that got this lady in trouble are very similar to things that J.K. Rowling has said.
I think, okay, so I'll actually read this article because this paragraph from the article actually kind of dips into it. But it says, Ubisoft didn't specify which of Lewis' comments it considers controversial, but Jezebel, via Kotaku, noted last year that she has expressed views in opposition of expanded rights for trans people. In a 2017 opinion piece criticizing changes to UK law aimed at simplifying the process of changing one's legally recognized gender, for instance, she wrote, being a woman or a man is now entirely in your head. In this climate, who would challenge someone with a beard exposing their penis in a women's changing room? So differences between her and, actually, I don't even know. I get, is it the same thing? Because, you know, Rowling is considered a TERF.
Yes.
Or a trans exclusionary radical feminist, which means she doesn't include trans people, trans women as women. This person is just kind of going with the extreme example, right? Like, you know, like I've heard people say, oh, well, what if some pervert just decides to say that, you know, they identify as a female and go into a girl's bathroom and look under all the toilet stalls, and I'm just kind of like, who the fuck? You know, like, is it possible? Sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is in the realm of possibility that can happen. But it, like, you know, the act of something like that actually happening is ridiculous. Like her example here is someone with a beard exposing their penis in a women's changing room. Like, what?
I'm shaking my head, like making that like confused kind of like, what are you even like? I'm making that like, I know it's not coming through on the podcast, but yeah. Like,
and here's the thing, right? Yeah. There's people who will do that now without saying that they're trans. You know what I'm saying? There's people who will do that now without saying that they're trans. So you're telling me the cops are going to get there and they're going to say to the cops, oh, no, I'm a woman. The cops are like, oh, man, he's got us there. Like, no, that's not what they're going to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not how this is going to work. So technically speaking, I guess her and Rowling are both kind of like anti-trans. So I guess maybe that might be a broad overstatement, because she could say, oh, well, I'm not anti-trans, I just don't think it should be that easy to change your gender. Okay, lady, whatever. You know, but like, you know, that's I don't know how close you would consider it to, because honestly I didn't look too deep into the Rowling stuff. I read a couple quotes. She is openly, you know, against, you know, calling trans women, so wasn't that difficult.
The reason I brought up Rowling having made similar comments and then trying to remember whether Hogwarts Legacy was an Ubisoft game or not. And it looks like it's a Warner Brothers game.
Ah.
So.
That means bugs on PC. Okay.
But No, the reason I asked that is because it would make it would, or at the very least, I think when you have those kind of comments out there and you've seen the reaction to the Harry Potter game, that people are like, we're not even going to touch this, like boycott the game basically because of their association with Rowling. I think Ubisoft saw that and they're like, whoa, okay, we've got, you know, not to the same degree. Obviously, it's very easy for them to just cut all ties with this podcaster and be done with it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, we're just cutting this and moving on and we'll all be good. Obviously, the Harry Potter game is a lot more intricately connected to J.K. Rowling. And they've tried to distance themselves as much as they can. But I think it's the kind of thing where you've seen what else is going on in the industry and you're like, okay, this is going to be a problem. And at least they, as soon as they found out about it, presumably, I mean, they could have known about this in the past and then like just kind of hope nobody would notice. But it sounds more like, yeah, it was as soon as they got to their attention, they're like, yeah, this is going to be a problem and we'll just nip it in the bud right now. So I think they did the right thing in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, somebody might have just told Eves like just the start of this. He's like, nope, deal with it now. We have enough problems to deal with. Like, just take care of it. Get it out of here. The only thing that really sucks about stuff like this is that, you know, she's going to get cut from the game. And I'm pretty sure, you know, she's going to be like, look, they're taking me out of the game because of my freedom of speech, blah, 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 blah. And that gives her an additional platform, unfortunately. Actually, I know, like, a couple articles did not even mention what the controversial stuff might have been. And I think they were trying to avoid that. But, you know, I didn't read the comments because you don't read the comments, folks. No. Like,
well, the good news is that as much as she might feel that her freedom of speech is being silenced, she's still a podcaster outside of the game. And therefore, she can still podcast and talk about that to her delight. So,
exactly. So, yep, she is out. That's another one. So, all right, let's go ahead and move on. We're going to talk about Microsoft tightening up security on the Xbox a bit. This actually comes from gamesindustry.biz. And it looks like the issue is that, and I don't know if this is all games or just some games on the Xbox, and I'm going to dive a bit deeper into this once I kind of get past the beginning part here. But Microsoft is phasing out peer-to-peer voice connections between players in order to improve security for Xbox. All right. And one of the reasons they're doing this is because it looks like if you get if you connect to somebody's party on Xbox and play Rainbow Six Siege, they can access your IP address and then DDoS your network. You don't, to my knowledge, I don't believe they'll get your IP address through the Xbox. More than likely, they're probably like a tech savvy individual. If you connect to their Xbox, they can probably get your IP address. Or even if you connect into, if they're connecting to your Xbox or your home network, you'll get their IP address or they'll get your IP address. Either way, they'll get your IP address through like their router and they'll be able to attack you that way. In response, an Xbox engineer, Bill Ridman, he says that Microsoft is aware of the issue and they are taking steps to fix it. The quote is, "We are actually phasing out P2P voice connections for party chat completely, which we've been working on quite a bit in the background to stop this very problem. We've been ramping up a larger percentage of parties to be completely server-based week over week, so you don't make direct connections to other party members so they cannot see your IP, and soon should have no more P2P-based parties." So the reason I want to bring this up is because I think it's important because this is not just a chat. This is not like a Microsoft-centric issue, right? This is not just an issue with the chat. Like this is one example of the problem with P2P connections. I think a bigger problem with P2P connections are multiplayer games. When you're actually playing multiplayer games. So a lot of console games especially use peer-to-peer connections for their multiplayer titles. I'm pretty sure Destiny did. I don't know if Destiny does it now, but they definitely did it before. And so what happens is, let's say you and your friends are playing the Crucible in Destiny, right? Your friends give you their IP addresses. If one of your PS4s or Xboxes manages to get the game on your box, right, you will then see all of the IP addresses of everybody connecting to it. So you're talking, I think it's 5v5, so you're talking 10 players there, right? You take your friends, you give them high QoS, like you put them on the high level of QoS. You take all of the other IP addresses, you put them on the low quality QoS, right? That means when they're shooting at you, that means when they're moving, stuff like that, their packets are coming in slower, right? Or your packets go out to their devices faster, they register faster, so you're able to kill them more. It's essentially cheating. Like, you could do this, and you could do this in Destiny. I know you could do this in Destiny. I don't know if Call of Duty still does peer-to-peer servers. I'm pretty sure they do for console. I'm pretty sure they do. But yeah, like that's why all that peer-to-peer shit's got to go. It just does. For co-op, obviously, it's different because nobody's going to fuck their co-op partners. But for competitive multiplayer games, like, yeah, like that shit's got to go. But that's just an example. And not everybody can do it, by the way, right? Like, you have to have a router. You probably, and don't get me wrong, you can probably get like a ROM for a home router. So you can see, who's connecting, who's not, do QoS, stuff like that. So that's why I wanted to bring it up, because Microsoft they're closing that hole when it comes to the chat application, right? And that's not even QoS, right? That's not quality of service. That's just DDoS. That's just somebody being an asshole. They get your IP address, they flood your device with packets, right? So they're trying to close that gap. But I think it's been a problem for a long time to help tech savvy people kind of cheat in these situations.
I just want to point out, for the less tech savvy out there, in case there's any concerns, there's no threat to your credit card or your account or to your actual Xbox physically through these attacks. They're just, as we pointed out, they're just sort of flooding your router of anything, not so much the Xbox even, but flooding your network connection so that you drop out. So you're not, your actual account and identity are sort of, they're unaffected by this.
Yeah. If somebody wanted to steal like your account information, all they have to do is call Xbox support. So, yeah, it's true. One of the do you remember that a couple years ago when there was a ton of Xbox accounts getting stolen, and it turns out that it was because they were getting phished through Xbox support? I hope they close that hole. To be honest with you,
let me just say, as the resident Microsoft shill, I believe that they did, and I know that Xbox has nothing but the utmost regard for our security and safety.
Oh, well, there you go. A couple of O's just went into Nick's bank account.
If only.
Oh, yeah.
It's a couple of O's, but there's nothing leading on.
Oh, man. Let's move on to our next article. Square Enix reports $48 million loss. This is an article from PC Gamer. It says, driven by weak sales of Marvel's Avengers, Square Enix has posted an operating loss in its HD game segment of more than 5 billion yen, or $48 million, for the second quarter of the current financial year. This information comes from the latest release of financial results for the six-month period of April through the end of September 2020. Marvel's Avengers, a live service game developed by Crystal Dynamics, was heavily advertised and expensively produced, but was panned by both critics and the broader gaming audience. Yeah, it was. I don't know what to say, man. Like, stop making live service games. Like, but please, like, think about all the, like, how many live service games have been successful, really? On purpose. Not talking about, like, Fortnite. Epic tripped into that shit, Apex has been successful for EA, but in that space, like, there's my theory. You can only really have two games that fit that space. Getting a third game in there is going to be tricky. Getting a fourth game in there is going to be impossible, because it was, what was it? H1N1. And then it was PUBG, and then Fortnite, and then Apex came. And I think it was Apex. Was it? No, it was PUBG, Fortnite. Was it Call of Duty after that? Call of Duty dropped their Battle Royale. That kind of pushed the PUBG out. Apex came, pushed the Call of Duty Battle Royale out.
I don't know if... I think you're taking a very narrow view of the live service, because Avengers, I think, is more comparable to something like Destiny as far as being like a loot.
It is. Loot, I was going to come around to that.
Okay.
Come around to that, yeah. Excuse me, Nick. Okay. Like, yeah, no, but I was saying, like, you can really only have, in my theory is that you, like, in terms of like these games like this, like, you know, that are running perpetually, you can really only have like two of them in the space that people are going to play. And then once you get into, you know, more than that, you're going to run into trouble. So you have Destiny. Destiny is Destiny. Tons of people still playing it. It's been lucrative for, I was going to say Bethesda, but sorry, for Bungie. You do have The Division, which is a far second, but you also have, not even a far second, sorry. I would say second is maybe Warframe, you know. So you got Destiny, you got Warframe, you got The Division in there. And then, like, what other live service games are doing really well that aren't free to play?
Technically, Diablo falls into that brand, but, I mean, that's, we're waiting on Diablo 4 at this point. So, I mean, Diablo
is that really, is that's what I'm saying. Is that really a live service game? Because they don't have seasons. They don't have,
they like, have seasons. New,
they do have seasons with new content.
New armor that you can get. I don't think they're any putting out any actual new news. Well, they did put out some zones a while ago. They haven't done that recently. But yeah, they are putting out new, they are doing seasons with new armor every that you can keep acquiring for that. And stuff like that. But I mean, at this point, that's really just in a holding pattern and waiting for Diablo 4 to come out. I was gonna say, technically it falls into that looter shooter, for lack of a better term, but like, I guess Borderlands 3, that's another one that would kind of fall into that.
Right. Yeah. But that's what I mean. Borderlands 3. I mean, I guess technically it's not, I wouldn't even call it a live service game. It's like every couple months, you know, they not even every couple months, like they're going to stop updating Borderlands 3 after a while. I would say probably after year two for sure. But like, you know, this game, like these live service games, like I don't see them succeeding too much. I mean, everybody wants a live service game, right? Because they want the gift that keeps on giving. You know, when we throw some microtransactions in there and have like something that's just going to keep giving money. But I can't even imagine that Destiny's microtransactions are really working. I can't imagine. The Division's microtransactions aren't really working. They're really focusing on people buying a expansion at this point yearly, you know? So for this game, like, it needed to sell well, first of all. But second, like, I don't know. I have it, and I keep saying I'm going to go play it. But then I'm thinking about it, I'm going to go play something else. Like, you know, like something that I really enjoy. Like, I want to finish it just to finish it, to be perfectly honest with you. I think it would have been much better as a single-player title with some DLCs attached to it. Like, you know, a single-player title with co-op available, you know.
But that's what I think. We have that. That's Ultimate Alliance.
Oh, true. Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. Marvel has done a very good job, I think, of managing their IP. I mean, whatever type of game you want to play, be it the single player like Ultimate Alliance, or what, I mean, how many different mobile versions with the like Future, is it like Future Shock or something? Isn't that like one of the games or something I keep seeing advertised? They are Future Force or something. They have there's a whole bunch of Marvel games that are still out there, you know, several on mobile that are still supported. And every so often they cull them and pull them out. I wonder how long this game will exist for, because it feels to me like they killed Marvel Heroes. I've said this before. They've killed Marvel Heroes that was on PC and PlayStation and presumably Xbox. You know, they killed that, which was more in the Diablo style of game, to replace it with this, which I think is a bit more of a direct, I guess like a brawler kind of game. But it just, I don't know. It just feels like the game didn't hit the way they wanted it to, and I don't know why that is. I've heard that the story itself, actually, like leveling up, playing through the story is good, and then it's just when you get to end game, there's kind of not so much meat there, and that can kind of be like a death knell for a live service game. If the service part is kind of where you're in trouble. But that said, you could very easily get this, play through the story part, treat it like a $60, $60 single player game, you know, with co-op optional. And then when you get to the end of it, you're just done. You finish the story and move on.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, for a live service game like this to work, like Destiny works to a degree because it has content that is replayable. Like you don't necessarily mind replaying the content over and over again. This game, like, I don't want to replay any of the content. it's just not that enthralling. It's not that great, to be perfectly honest with you. And I'll finish it eventually. I just don't know when.
I think the problem is with ultimately what you want is you want a game where the appeal is playing the game. Like, I want to keep playing the game, and oh, there's different awards I can work for and whatnot, or, you know, I can pay for a season pass and work to level that up and all that kind of stuff. I feel like the way, you know, I play Marvel Heroes a lot, so I'm going to keep comparing it to that. The thing about like the Marvel games is that, especially when they put the different costumes in, is it's like, oh, it's all about the collection. If you're one of the people where it's like, oh, I got to get all these different outfits for all the different characters, and I got to grind all that out because I want that. You know, especially if you're like, oh no, like they put in this one specific costume from this specific book or this specific movie, and it's exactly, you know, how I envision that character being. You can get sucked into it that way. But if you're not that big into that aspect of it, if you're like, yeah, okay, you know, I got like two or three different outfits for the Hulk or whatever, and he's good. Then yeah, ultimately it comes down to, if the gameplay is not there, if the actual live service part, when you're max level doing stuff, if that's not enticing, if there's not enough stuff to keep you there, then yeah, eventually you're going to run into trouble. And I think that's kind of what they've run into here, is just that, yeah, you know, they have a bunch of like cool costumes and stuff, but the work to get those costumes isn't necessarily worth it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, and on top of that, the thing about the, like, you know, loot and stuff like that in a game like Destiny or a game like The Division or in Warframe, like, it just makes you much more powerful. Like, you want exotics in Destiny, you know what I'm saying? In terms of this game, like, do you just want this outfit? Just like,
The outfits are separate from the power, so you're still like equipping stuff, but the skin that you have is separate from that. So you're still doing the same thing as in Destiny, like changing out, and I don't know what the term for exotics that they use, but you do have like that tier structure of gear that you're going through and trying to upgrade everything and whatnot. And that's always been, I think, the one problem to a degree. And it's interesting because I know like Destiny's adding a transmog feature coming up in Beyond Light, but like one of the fun things about when you start playing a game is like, oh, every time I get a new piece of gear, I can change, you know, I can see that gear on my character. I remember like when the first Diablo did that, it was like mind blowing to me at the time. And it's like, oh, you know, like, you know, you feel the sense of progression because you're watching your character's appearance change. And then you get to a point, and I guess transmog is a little bit different because you're still building your character's outfit from all the appearances you've collected throughout your time playing that game. Whereas, you know, and so you've got a very customized outfit that you want to go with, and you know, you don't necessarily have to see that evolve, you know, the same way that you did before. But with the Marvel games, it's a little bit off-putting because it's like, oh no, like, you know, Spider-Man still looks like Spider-Man. It's just, you know, he's wearing different bracers or different web shooters, and he's got boots of whatever, but he still looks the same. And especially at the early levels, like, I think it doesn't, I think there can be, on the one hand, like, yes, there's an appeal to being like, oh, this is how Spider-Man should look, and this is how I want him to be. And he, you know, he plays like an early level Spider-Man, but at the same time, like, when you, I think for a live service game, when you want to have that identity that, you know, you want that avatar to feel connected to you. And, you know, it's like, as much as we all like, oh yeah, it's cool to be Spider-Man, like, it's almost more like you're renting Spider-Man. Like, you're not actually inhabiting that. You're just playing alongside him. And I wonder if there's just a fundamental thing where, because you're playing as that kind of character, you don't connect as much. Like, I mean, you look at like World of Warcraft and how people are so enmeshed and identify with their characters there. You know, and again, you know, same thing can be said for Destiny, that, you know, how people identify with their characters. I think there's a level of connection for those games that a game like Avengers just can't quite reach.
No, I think that's actually an excellent point too, that, you know, you just don't have that connection. Even though I still think it would have been better off as like a kind of like a solo title or something like that, because the fact that it's a live service game, you know, live service games, these multiplayer games also don't have the same level of focus a single player title does, right? Like, Doom is an amazing shooter because it is not focused on multiplayer. The single player is focused on single player. The Titanfall 2 single player is not just training mode for the multiplayer or for co-op. It is its own thing, and that's why it's so amazing. So by having these things be single player, you know, they can focus just more on what I thought would have made it a better game. But I can totally understand why it didn't sell the way it wanted to. Like, it was probably an expensive game to really produce. And then on top of that, the licensing, you know, so yeah. But let's go ahead and move into our final topic here. Take-Two in talks to buy Codemasters. So I'm just going to kind of read through this article from gamesindustry.biz. Codemasters today informed investors that it has been in discussions with Take-Two for a sale of the company and has received a non-binding offer to acquire the company for 485 pence per share. That's 120 pence of that will be paid in cash. The rest in Take-Two's interactive shares. Can you please look up what the fuck pence is?
I thought you said pants.
Oh, penance. Is it penance or is it pence? It's pence, right?
I think it's pence.
Penance. Can you look that up, please?
I want to say that's like a British unit of currency, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like, so I will keep reading while Nick looks that up. In a separate announcement, Take-Two explained.
Pence is the vice president of the United States.
Oh, thank you. In a separate announcement, Take-Two explained its thinking behind the acquisition, saying Take-Two believes that the combination of Take-Two and Codemasters would bring together two world-class interactive entertainment portfolios with a highly complementary fit between Take-Two's 2K publishing label and Codemasters in the racing genre. In addition, Take-Two believes that it can bring benefits to Codemasters.
Okay, pence is basically the plural of penny in for British currency. So it is the penny sterling or penny symbol, plural pence, is a subdivision of pound sterling, the currency for the United Kingdom. It is currently 1/100th of a pound. But it was in the, okay, then it goes on. Yeah, so it's basically like for the British pound, it's the penny to the, if the British pound was a dollar, basically.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not getting it because it sounds kind
of
cheap.
Well, it's instead of like, it's like reading the article, instead of it being in like US dollars, it'd be like if they just
share.
Said, yeah. Like,
it's I'm sorry. I missed that part. It's per share. That's why I was like, seems kind of cheap. But okay, gotcha. All right. So, let's say in addition, Take-Two believes that it can bring benefits to Codemasters' performance by leveraging Take-Two's global distribution network and 2K's core operating expertise in publishing, including live operations, analytics, product development, and brand and public performance marketing. The only reason I'm even bringing this up, or the only reason I care about this, because I feel like it brings us one step closer to getting another Midnight Club. That's the only reason I'm even bringing this up. Because, well, I mean, if they buy them, they don't buy them, we'll see. But if they do have Codemasters, which dedicated themselves to racing a while back, thankfully, they made this game. I can't, what was it called? Somebody else bought it, and that game still runs to this day. It is an MMO. I can't remember what it's called. Hold on, let me see. Let me see if I can find it. It's Codemasters MMO. They made it.
Racing Ahead?
No, it wasn't a racing game.
Oh.
Was it? It wasn't a racing game.
Arc Lord?
No. It was in the early 2000s. It was called... Oh, I can't find it.
RF Online?
RF Online. That's it. That's what they made. And it was god-awful. It was so bad.
I did not spend all that time Googling the name of a game just for you to tell me that it was god-awful. I didn't realize that's where you were going with this.
RF Online was so bad. And it was made by Codemasters originally, or at least publisher. It was published by Codemasters. And I was like, when I played it, I said, I will never buy another Codemasters game again. It was that bad. I will never buy another Codemasters game again. And then I eventually ended up buying Dirt. That's when I actually got back in the Codemasters and I bought Dirt. And Dirt 2, they redeemed themselves. And I think like a little bit before that, they decided they were going to do racing games only, you know, and they've been doing a good job. Well, they did a good job, but then they started getting, I think they just started leaning too heavily into the simulation stuff. Like Dirt 4, in my opinion, it was a good game, but it was still way more simulation than the Dirt series originally. And this Dirt 5 they're putting out now is definitely going back to its more arcadey roots, which is awesome, in my opinion. Like, if I want to play an actual rally racing game, I will do, like, the WCG, I think. No, that's WCG. I forget what, like, I can't remember the name of it right now. But they also have Dirt Rally, too, which is, like, more simulation. But I miss Dirt a whole lot because of their arcadey stuff. That being said, Midnight Club is arcadey as fuck. And it needs to stay that way. You know, like, your car could jump in the air and you could have air control over your car in Midnight Club. It was awesome. You know, but it would bring us, my dream right now is that Take-Two buys Codemasters. They take the license for Midnight Club, move it over to Codemasters. Cause it's a Rockstar game. It's a Rockstar title. Or they just have Rockstar publish it and have Codemasters develop it. You know, just do that. And then we have another Midnight Club and I'll just be the happiest that I'd be the happiest person on the planet. Get a new Midnight Club, man. We're overdue, Rockstar. We are so overdue. I know you're making epic games now, you know, these epic titles like GTA 5 and Red Dead Redemption 2. But come on, man, throw me a bone here.
It's so overdue. They'd have to call it Noon Club.
Okay, so yeah, that's gonna be it for us. I'd like to thank you guys for listening. What is coming up this week on Mash Those Buttons? Last week I said we only had 7 shows. I was actually wrong. We had 9. We had 9 shows to publish last week. This week I think it's gonna be the same thing because we got Clan of Three, Mash Those Buttons show, obviously. And this is all Monday. Clan of Three Monday, Mash Those Buttons show on Monday, Warcraft Reloaded on Monday. Well, I got to double check that because somebody didn't send me their files. So I'll double check on that. And then also a special Sit Rep Radio this Monday. Tuesday.
Wait, we're Sit Rep Radio? Not Sit Rep
Happy Hour? Sorry, Sit Rep Happy Hour. Sit Rep Happy Hour. You know what I meant.
Did I? Then we, all-
then we also have a brand new Push the Point. Which is our, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a new Push the Point. Push the Point's last episode for this season, last regular episode of the season was last week. So now they're only going to do an episode once a month at the beginning of every month until the new Overwatch season. But we will have a new Double Tap on Tuesdays. Then after that, we're going to have a new WoW Talk on Wednesday, as well as a new Dropping Spicy on Wednesday. Yep, so that sounds about right. So yeah, it's a bunch of shows. I hope you enjoy them. And yeah, we got a lot coming out. But like I said, thank you guys for listening. If you want to keep up with what's going on with this show, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. And if you want to follow Nick, where can I find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on the Torn and the Goblin, our Warcraft story and lore show. And this week, on WoW Talk, our Warcraft News and Guild show. Yeah, we're just getting hyped. Shadowlands is coming in like 2 weeks, so it's going to be fun.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at Jostradamus. And you can also find me streaming on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. Right now, we are streaming GTFO every Friday, like starting around 9:30 or so, maybe 10 o'clock. But yeah, that's at least one day where I'm definitely streaming, sometimes Saturday. I'm probably gonna pick up a couple extra days of streaming too, so stay tuned for that. And we'd love to have you join our Discord, which is mash.gg/discord. And you know, you can join the community there, come talk to me and Nick. We do have a channel for the Mashes Button show, so you can tell us what you think about the show or have any questions, comments about what stuff we talked about. Do you love live service games and want every game to be a live service game? Come to Discord and talk about it. I encourage you guys to reach out with comments and questions. And you can do that by, you know, either coming into the Discord or reaching out to us via Twitter. You can also email us at contact@mash.gg. And if you want to help us out, one of the best ways to do that is to share the show with others and to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. If you want to take your support a bit further, you can become a Patreon at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. You can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month. And gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. We also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And you can also throw us a Twitch sub if you like. If you, you know, at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons if you want to support that way. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And with that, we are done for the night. Thank you guys very much. We will catch you next week. Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.